I do feel high. I do feel like my microphone's high. Hey! Hey, welcome back to the garage, everybody. David Storm, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, Sid. How are you?
This music's so ridiculous.
I know, I love it.
Thanks, Ben. Man, it feels good to be back in the garage, but I gotta say, man, last week was one of the highlights of my life, and I wasn't expecting it.
It was cool.
It was really fucking cool. I don't know why you wouldn't know about it, but last week we did our 1 year anniversary live podcast, and
pretty badass.
And you know what? Here's my favorite thing about it. It all came about by happenstance. Like,
did you say happenstance?
Is that a word?
It is now.
I think anyway. So I didn't know it was our 1 year. It just happened to be our 1 year. Uh-huh. It just kind of snowballed because, like, Kenji said he wanted to do something at Cheeky and Dry, and then Brady was coming in town, and I'm like, let's fucking force it and make it happen. And because I was so busy with the event, the Run the Jewels event, like, I literally didn't put any thought into it until
I think 2 days before.
And then it all worked out, and it was beautiful. And I think one thing I said was I really wanted a bunch of fans of the podcast to come, and like a bunch of random people I didn't know. And then turns out those random people work on Mondays, so it ended up being a lot of people we knew. Which was actually a better feeling. It felt very like, you know, having
an inspiring group of people.
Inspiring group of people, and having five or six people that have been on the podcast, like come around, like Chris, and you know,
very
KP.
Talented group of people.
Very talented. Like, I feel very blessed to be in this community. And, man, you know, it's, you know, I talk about this a lot, but like working Kutu, it's like it's 12-hour days by yourself, you know, and like to come in on a Monday and get this kind of support from every reach, street food and Ben's friends, everything. It was a fucking great time.
I did not know what to expect, and I was so.
Oh, you either?
I was so pleasantly surprised.
You're like, oh, Sid's got this. I'm sure he's got Kenji coming. Okay, last thing I'm gonna say about this, then we're gonna introduce our guest. You sent me a message and you go, is Kenji mad at us? And here's the thing. I didn't think that he was mad at us until you messaged me and said. And
you got in your own head.
And here's why. So why'd you ask me that?
Oh, because normally you will like give the guests a link and they'll share
and they'll
it
post
to their page. Or not, they won't, you know? And so I was like, oh God, what do we do?
So yeah, you're saying he never posted about it, whatever. So something I do when I design, so I design all the little Instagram things, all through Canva. Maybe Canva will give me a discount if I say this, but they make it very easy to be a graphic designer. And so I create all the things. And sometimes if it's late at night, I'm just, feeling very extra creative, I'll work on it a little bit more. And what I've done in the past is if someone's wearing a blank shirt.
Yeah, it's called a foxtail.
Yeah, so if someone's wearing a blank shirt, our guest today is not, so I'm not going to fuck with him. But, like, sometimes I will...
What you did to Stoneburn.
And I think maybe I did one other time where I'll create a logo or a callback from something we say in the episode. Like,
right.
So with Stoneburner...
he was Boards.
Is Boards. So he said the name of Stoneburner almost was called Boards with a Z, and I was like, oh, that sounds like a nu metal band. So, like, I wrote Boards with a Z and put, like, a nu metal fist.
Yeah, yeah.
So with Kenji wore a plain shirt, and I'm just fucking around, and Meg from, she's going to be a future guest, but she's a writer for Seattle, Eater and some other places. She said that we should not be calling them mocktails, but calling them foxtails, like faux tails.
Which I agree.
I agree. I love that name. And so I made a little logo for. And I texted Meg. I go, man, I can't get foxtails on my head. Like I picture foxtails with the L being a foxtail. You know.
Uh-huh.
So I created that logo. I just put on Kenji's shirt. Now, rewind to last time he was on the podcast. He mentioned, like, I gave him some Ballyhoo hot sauce, and then he's like, hey, I can't take free stuff. Like, I don't like promoting stuff, you know, like, and I get it. And we're going to talk about that on today's episode about influencers and paying stuff and the whole Buddy's chicken thing. But so I was worried that maybe after you put in my mind that maybe he was mad at me,
I'm all damn,
I go, fuck. Maybe he doesn't understand the T-shirt thing. Maybe he thinks that I slapped some bar's name on his shirt and, like, I'm getting free publicity. I don't know. I start going crazy because you put it in my head. And then, like, obviously I posted something that he reposted and posted a link.
Yeah, I saw
that. And it was all in my head. Anyway.
You're welcome.
Thank you for doing that. Man, so first of all, we were supposed to have a guest, he had a medical emergency, which is very understandable. So he's not going to be here, but we're going to reschedule. But today we have a very special guest. I feel like we have enough history that we're going to be able to talk about for two guests. My very good friend Gary from Queen Anne Beer Hall. Gary, how are we doing today, brother?
Awesome, man. How are you guys doing? This is awesome.
It's
great.
I'm so excited to have you. One, you just told me this is your first like podcast interview thing you ever.
Yeah. I mean, tons of stuff on the news and things that just from promoting the restaurant, but. As far as a fun podcast that I listen to regularly and with cool guys I know, like that's the first time I've done that.
So first of all, we met through poker during quarantine, playing online. That's literally that's how I met you and a bunch of people I'm friends with to this day. Was from like kind of an industry online poker game where you do Zoom and stuff, and that's how we met. And I remember it was kind of a sloppy game.
I think it's the first time I used Zoom before.
Yeah.
We had like one screen with poker on it, one screen with Zoom on it, and we're just getting fucked up drinking and doing shots and like it was
and everything else. And then here's what's really cool. So we did the Wu-Tang event at Queen Anne Beer Hall, and that was the first time. Let's see, because you just acquired it during quarantine?
Yeah, we, September 2020. So, like, I mean, that's like when we opened. What? I mean, like, we took over then.
I feel like we keep on interviewing people that are always like, yep, March of 2020.
Yeah, what were we all thinking?
Yeah.
but everything's the cheapest.
And, right? And we're going to talk about the Wu-Tang dinner in the interview, but I just want to point this out. One thing that you did that was really cool was... I saw the beer hall. I think we came like to open it or something. I go, this is where Wu-Tang has to be. And this was still during quarantine. You gave me a price for what it was going to be. And I was like, cool, this is my price. I'm going to work with the budget. And we didn't have a date or anything. And then I kept on working on it. And then the event price shit happened and blah, blah. And then we got out of quarantine and we're like, cool. And like, we weren't sure. And then we were. And then we weren't sure. And then we were. And then we were totally out of it. And then when I did the event, you still kind of honored that price, even though you could have made way more. Because you gave me the like, hey, if we shut down on a Sunday in quarantine, this is what we would make. But you gave me that price, even though you probably could have made a lot more off me. So I appreciate that. But we're going
to
talk about
it. Well, to be fair, you had lost a lot of money to me in poker the year before. So like, it was, I kind of really owed you, really, to be honest.
Came out of the end.
You still came out of that. But yeah, so obviously you own a bunch of stuff. You own a couple things now. But what is your restaurant background?
Yeah, I've been doing this for like 30 years. And I'll tell you the...
Is it 30 years?
Yeah, almost 30 years managing. And right. I think I lost my 30s and 40s to corporate restaurants, where I also learned everything I know.
Sure, yeah.
Like everything I learned about leadership and people and culture and even just management. And totally. It was really awesome. So I worked for BJ's restaurants for about 12 years. Worked for Gordon Biersch for about 9. And then most recently, I ran Pike Brewing Company. I was director of operations for them. And then this opportunity came up. It was the first time I had an opportunity to become an owner. And it just all worked out. Like you said, in the middle of COVID and met a couple dudes. And it was just, I was scared.
Yeah.
Super
sure.
scared. And,
yeah.
And I said, let's do this. Yeah. And it's just worked out.
I mean, I'm surprised to say this is your first ownership. Because obviously, like, I didn't know that till just now, but the way you carry yourself, it acts like you've been doing this for years. But obviously, you've been seeing the numbers. You know how this all works. You know how the sausage is made. I will say, I agree with you. I talk about this on podcast where I worked at Buffalo Wild Wings for 3 years. And while I was, not like my proudest culinary moment, like, I learned like how you clean a kitchen, like very detailed, or how they make you clean the kitchen, and you know how to.
That's gotta be a greasy ass kitchen.
A lot of fryers and stuff, and it kind of like it trains you to like I think about this almost once a week when I clean my trailer, or after service, I get in the what do you call those things in the walk in, like the little the padding, like you kind of the accordion style.
The gaskets. Oh
yeah, gaskets. Of course you know that. When I'm cleaning those, I always think, I clean that with a towel, and I'm always like, I think I learned this from Buffalo Wild Wings because they would go through at the end of the night and do your check and whatever. Like, and I'm sure like if I didn't work at a corporate place like that didn't check the what are they called gaskets. They didn't check the gaskets. I probably wouldn't know to clean the gaskets.
Have you ever experienced that one lazy cook who wraps his whole station in Saran wrap? And then at
so
the
you
end
can't
of
check
the,
it.
Yeah. And then at the end of the night. He just wraps it all, throws it away, and be like, peace.
Yeah. But sorry. Okay. So no back of house experiences. Mostly front of house.
With BJ's, I was a chef for a couple years.
Oh no shit.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I mean, but there was a kind of company that wanted you to learn everything, right?
Yeah.
And I appreciated that, so I learned a lot about food and food cost and portion control and quality control and all that kind of stuff. It wasn't really a chefy job where I was coming up with dishes, but it was definitely I learned everything about the restaurant business.
But before management, what were you doing?
Bartending, you know, yeah. I was a cowboy working at the Maverick in Tucson, Arizona, with a black 5X felt hat and you know, Coors heavies,
big
and
old
you know,
like belt it was, buckle.
It was just, it was seriously Wranglers and a Garth Brooks shirt. This was like 1990.
Dude, I love
In Texas,
no, Arizona, yeah, Tucson, Arizona. Yeah, yeah.
Will you please send us a picture of that?
I do have a couple with my last girlfriend, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's good. It's good times.
Tucson's a crazy place, man.
I didn't want to bring that up. I'm like, Tucson in the 90s. Like, how accepted? Okay, cool. Now there you go.
Yeah. For the record, I've been married to my husband for 5 years. So, yeah. So but my last girlfriend was in Tucson in 1990.
That makes sense. The 90s were wild.
Which makes that picture way better.
Cool. So, and then you jumped into management. We are too high. So we jumped to the management, and you did that for years. And then, so talk about how Beer Hall came up for you.
Yeah, it was crazy. So, you know, I was making good money at Pike, and then, you know, the pandemic hit. And so it was tough because there just wasn't a lot of money coming in, right? Yeah. I mean, we're the market and everything like that. And, So there's a couple guys that are in the mortgage business, actually very talented dudes that are in the mortgage business, had an opportunity to buy the Beer Hall through a couple other people. They were smarter, though, to know that they didn't have anything. They knew nothing about restaurants, yeah. Right? And yeah. So they almost said no. And I think my name came up a couple times because everything I've done is very high volume,
right.
Beer-focused kind of stuff. Yeah. And this was a place that was 7,000 square feet, occupancy of 420 people. Just a giant place.
Yeah.
And so I met this guy at Queen Anne Beer Hall one day, like in July of, you know, it was 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
And first of all, I've lived downtown for 12 years.
Right.
I never heard of Queen Anne Beer Hall.
Yeah.
It was there for 5 years. Yeah. Like, it's a beautiful space, but you can't really tell from the outside.
Right, yeah,
and
yeah.
I feel like I lived right a few miles from there.
I literally
like,
lived at that Ava across the street.
Yeah, I had no idea it was even there, you know? And so it was beautiful. And you know, I sat down with this guy and I'm thinking, this is not going to work. Right. Yeah. Like, he's this mortgage guy, like kind of like a frat guy.
Real quick. What was it before the Beer Hall? It was like a toy, like a,
so like 25
weird.
Years ago, it was a children's clothing factory.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not children making clothes.
Yeah, yeah.
Clothes for children.
It's big enough to be a child work
labor,
factory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it still is on Sundays because we can't find anyone to work.
Oh, work.
But, yeah, it's pretty crazy. It is definitely, it used to be that. But then, yeah. And then it was closed for a lot of years. And it was Queen Anne Beer Hall for 5 years before us.
Got it. Yeah.
But that concept was German music, German food.
Right.
You know, German, and that's it, right? Like, and you know, I always say, you know, try to find 300 people that want schnitzel on a Monday.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Like, and that kind of place.
Leavenworth in Queen Anne.
And you know, you could put 50 people in there and it seems dead. You know, so we've got to be able to.
I remember walking through there in quarantine going, oh my God. Like, I felt bad for you. I'm like,
yeah,
this is
I think their busiest year was.
I'm dead serious. Felt bad for you. I'm like, how this, like, we're going to, quarantine's going to last forever and you're never going to fill this place up. Like,
it was crazy. Yeah. I mean, they didn't have TVs because, you know, you can't have TVs because it's not a typical, you know, Czech Republic bar. No Wi-Fi because you're not supposed to be in your phone. This is a communal thing, right. You know, and I admire the passion. Right, but we gotta make some money.
Yeah,
some point.
Yeah,
right?
I get making a stand, but like I remember, you know, I read about a brewery like 7 years ago that's like, oh, we don't do IPAs, blah, blah, and then like they closed a year later. Sometimes you gotta listen to your customers. You know?
You really do, guys. So it was just cool. So I got together with these guys and we took over like in a management role for the first 10 months while we were getting our liquor license. So we just took over and had all the profits and losses were ours, and you know we took over September 17th of 2020 and. With I think 9 employees, right?
Yeah.
We have about 56 there now.
Yeah,
that one,
and
almost about 55 at our new location. So it's come a long way in three and a half years.
Nice job.
Yeah.
And you just recently opened up another one.
Yeah, Moss Bay Hall. Moss Bay Hall is downtown Kirkland, right on the waterfront, overlooking the marina and the water. It's beautiful.
And how many seats is that?
We'll seat 395 with a 470 occupancy, and our patio that overlooks the water there is going to fit 80.
Wow. What was it before?
It's called the Wild Rover. It was an Irish bar,
right? Yeah.
Way different though. Like 9-foot ceilings.
Yeah.
You know, now ours are like 15.
Yeah.
Everything was painted black. You know, it was cut into a couple different rooms. The room that we have now that overlooks all the water was just covered. It was like an old banquet room they never used.
Right.
Wow.
Like it was trippy. So we went in and we just did almost a complete demo. And
is it a similar menu as Queen Anne Beer Hall?
Similar. Or? You know, I'm finding that, you know. The classics that we make are what you got to sell the most of, right? Like,
if it works, it works.
Yeah. Our Queen of Beer Hall, honestly, our menu is a little too big. Like, now I'm realizing that, why is it that big? Like, you know what I mean? Our smash burgers are incredible. Our pretzels that we make fresh every day are incredible.
Do you still do the peanut butter one?
Oh yeah, peanut butter bacon. Yeah. We added a habanero raspberry habanero jam.
Oh,
on
fucking,
there.
Oh, nice.
It's
sounds
really
great.
Really good.
That's,
really,
I'm fucking starving now. Yeah, it's really but sorry. So so similar menu and what's the vibe like there? Is it still kind of sports and
It's a little different. It's funny you say sports because we did not go into this to be a sports bar, right? I mean, it was a cool beer hall. That's literally what it was. We knew that the Climate Pledge was about to open, so we knew we'd get those Kraken fans. But we weren't expecting to be this watch party place that you fill with 500 people. Like, it just, we didn't think it was that. And now we kind of are. I don't like to really say we're a sports bar, though.
Right.
But demographics totally different on the east side. I mean, it's just not the same in Seattle.
Yeah, totally.
We're hitting the same, if not more, sales than Queen Anne, and it's a totally different. We're making money all day, revenue all day, rather than just in a concentrated time.
Kirkland is
Kirkland, and we have families. There's what I call the housewives of Kirkland. Know that from Martini's at four, and then there's businesses a lot around there, and then the 20 somethings come in before they go to the Lime. And like, it's literally like, and it's just an all day thing.
Right.
Kirkland, by the way, they don't get up early, even on a Saturday or Sunday, right? So they're not there until like 1. And then they don't stay out late.
Right. Until concentrate, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're done by 10 o'clock.
So but, are you kind of adapting your hours and that kind of stuff?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And it's just in adapting what we have on our menu. And, you know, I never thought a kid's menu would be like a focus, right? You know.
Well, I mean, that's got to be such a huge swing because, like, you talk about, like, a bar that might be open till 2 a.m. and they get slow at 9 and they have to, like, they're like, fuck, I got to pay one bartender. For you, it's such a giant place and you got to be ready for it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, being open those extra couple hours, like, that's probably, like, thousands of dollars and, like, you know.
Yeah, and you know what's funny, though? I don't necessarily want that. Like, I'm just turned 54 and I'm not working that late for sure. And then, you know, Queen Anne Beer Hall, you know, we're right by, like, Aussies, right? That's right there. Yeah. And I love those guys over there. Yeah. But you can have those customers. Yeah. Like, to be honest, like, I'd rather come over and have a smash burger and have a couple rounds and then go to Aussies and sing karaoke and do shots. And you can have those sales. I love it.
Yep.
But I don't want it, though. I don't want to have security every night. I
typically, my food cart usually goes out in the mornings, but it's been a rough January. I'm like, fuck, I got to make some money. And so I've been picking up some shifts. And Saturday I worked a night shift at Stoop in Capitol Hill.
Oh, nice.
And I'm not joking. Like, I had anxiety for 2 days about having to work at night. Like, it just scares me. And that was just till like 9 o'clock. But like,
dude, we used to work at night all the time, man.
Dude, I know, but I'm an old man now, and I don't want it. Like, it was wonderful.
Past my bedtime.
I gotta say, Stoop was wonderful. Great customers. It was a great feeling to have like a bunch of new customers. And it's the same thing where it's that wonderful thing I talk about where like no one knows what the fuck I am. And then, like, one person comes in, like, oh, what's that smell? And then, like, then you suddenly get a huge line.
Chain
but,
reaction.
But,
you remember those days, like, then you close at 2, and then you're counting your money at 2:30.
Yeah.
And then it's all of a sudden 4, and then you're having your first cocktail.
Yeah.
And somehow it's the best tasting cocktail you've ever had, and suddenly it's 6.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't work tomorrow till 5. It's fine. Like, I'm good. But, like, that life was fun, but not what I want anymore, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so you got the second one, and how do you even staff it? Like, how do you like, I always bring you up as an example because, like, I love you to death, but you're the exact opposite of what I want in my life. Like, I am happy as the one-man show, and I think I brought you up on the podcast where I'm like, you're operating at such a higher level where the swings are much bigger. Like, yeah, you had a sold-out show at CPA, and, like, you had a packed house, and, you know, this is a nice feeling, but those days were slow. How do you do it, like, doubly now? Like, is it, like, the staffing and the water pipe breaks and everything? Like, how do you handle it?
It's been a total, complete change, right? It's like, I feel like we might as well have 10 restaurants. You know, like, when you have 2, it's just different.
Are you know, pulled, like, back and forth?
I'm at both. I thought I was going to be mostly at Moss Bay Hall most of the time, and now I'm really splitting my time. I miss the other place.
Yeah.
I walk in, there's new people. I'm like, wait, I haven't talked to these people. I don't know these people. Like, are they good? Like, you know, and it's just, and I have really strong managers. Isaac over there is incredible. Like, but it's, I still get nervous, right? So I want to make sure that I'm spending it at both. Oh. And then we have the, like, I call it executive level, but we, you know, we just hired a director of marketing, which is like, what P&L does that come out of? Like, I don't understand, like, how am I supposed to pay that? But that generates it. Like, so it's just, it's that level that I'd experienced in the corporate world, but I haven't really experienced on my own.
Right.
And it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool having you. But it's
how
crazy.
Do you find such a, I mean, it sounds like you got a pretty good pool of, a large pool of employees at both places. What's your go-to? Is this all out of your...
Because Dave has been bitching about, you know, like,
is
how hard it is.
Out of your inner circle? Or is there a format that you use?
Yeah, so I feel really bad because I think it is my inner circle.
All right,
I feel bad. I, like, to go on a restaurant podcast and say that I have never had, in the last few years, I've had I have no trouble hiring.
Right.
And I feel bad because I know a lot of people really yeah. have. Yeah.
Well, but what's the secret? Like, so is it the way you're paying people, the respect? Like, how do you?
So there's a little bit of everything. I think that I would love to say that the majority is me.
Yeah.
and how,
people just love to work for me.
Right. So they do it, but if they weren't to make any money, they wouldn't.
Right. 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 Yeah.
So there's a couple. I mean, first of all, our front of the house make a ton of money.
Sure.
I mean, we have multiple people making six figures.
Right.
You know, and that working really hard.
Yeah.
But they can really make a lot of money. So, and then our kitchen. As well, we're paying definitely more than most. I mean, right. we're a high volume place, right? So we're not super creative and stuff. Yeah. They're coming in and they're working a good 8-hour shift, but we're paying, you know, $26 to $30 an hour, you know, to get the right people. We're trying to pull in the right people.
Yeah.
And we're realizing that those people are more important at our type of restaurant than a chef is, to be honest.
Like, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I always talk about a kitchen manager versus a chef. And I need a chef. I need a guy that can do that. But that's the guy I need. And then the rest need to be kitchen managers.
Right.
You know, they really need to manage my business. They need to be able to control labor and again, quality and portion control and all that stuff because we are high volume.
Yeah.
Right. Like I use example, you know, I think our two restaurants sold, I think, almost 5,000 smash burgers in December.
Shit.
So when you put fries on that,
yeah.
if you took two fries off each one, we're talking about like 15 cases of fries.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's when it's portion.
And that's all the stuff you learn from your management.
And that's
experience.
A kitchen manager. That's not that's not necessarily
that's
someone
chef,
who, it's not a saucier, right? It's, it's a kitchen manager.
You're 100%. It's something I don't want to do with Kutu. I don't want to scale to that point where I go, okay, like a handful is a handful to me, you know, but like, you know, handfuls are different for different people. But yeah, dude, I want to talk about some fun stuff that happened this week. First of all, you were famous.
Yeah, I did a little cooking demo on Channel 13.
How'd that go for you?
The morning show.
Did it go better than mine?
yeah, it did.
I don't know if I brought this up. So I was on Q13 and
were you on the live studio one
with
Carly and all right.
So I've done it before, and last time they're like, okay, just plate the dish, whatever. So I cooked it at home, brought it there, and as soon as I get there, they're like, cool, what are you going to do for the live cooking demo? And I went back and forth on how I was going to do it, and I didn't fake it, but, like, I did it. But then when I plated it, I did a terrible job because, like, it was an overhead camera. I was talking. I was trying to remember all this stuff. Whatever. So I plated it terribly, and it was Chef Tyler. Have you been to Lady J in West Seattle?
Yeah.
And it was his dish, and I fucked it up so bad. And then during the dinner, one of the guys from Elysian that you know I was with on the show, he came up to me and was like, "Oh man, the steak was plated so much better tonight." Like, what was the deal? But anyway, did you feel any bump from that? Did you did people come and see you after that?
Yeah, it's really cool. You know, it's they were all old people. And but yeah, I had this really cute.
they still spend the same day.
No, I know. I just think it's funny that there are the people that have came to me and called me have all been pretty old. And I had this beautiful couple that came for they're like, we're coming over. Our friend's a fireman and is retiring in Bellevue, and we live in Whidbey Island. And we saw you on TV, and so we just decided to come early. And eat here, and then go back to the retirement party. And I was like, "Oh, thank you."
Oh, early bird, really?
Yeah, I know, right? And then I had this cute little old lady call me and tell me everything she loved and didn't love about the TV segment. And it was
wait. What did she not love?
How fast everybody talked.
My God. These people have nothing to do, and I'm for it. I love it. Like, was she taking notes that she doesn't?
And then she told me where I should be getting my apple pie from.
Which is her grandmother.
Redlinger Farms. Or I'm like, yeah, I don't know.
That is the cutest thing in the world. That's that's what Yelp should be. It should
totally.
Be phone
and,
calls
and she called
grandmothers.
Me in the middle of a busy Saturday.
And you took the whole call.
Yeah, I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna sit here and answer all of these ladies. This
so
lady's
from
questions.
Now on, Yelp should just be you put in your review,
yeah.
And the old lady calls the business at a busy Saturday and says, hey, just, you know, I don't like the color of your napkins.
But on the watch back, I was like, God damn, I sure talk with my hands a lot. And so that was kind of, I didn't know I used my arms and my hands.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 6'5", so my wingspan's kind of large.
I saw you hit Carly.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it went great. I had a good time. I appreciate them having me.
It's interesting because, you know, I can't remember which, you know, there's a lot of things where I've done TV and then you hit a certain demographic. Like, I remember one time, oh, yeah, I was on the news, and I remember I mentioned that I was sober. And then the next day, I had all these sober people come to my car, and I felt so bad because, like, I was California sober, not like, and like, it was
you're something. Like, I was actually drunk when they came to my car.
my favorite person in the world that I've never met and never been to the restaurant, Buddy's Chicken. Have you been following along? A couple weeks ago, we talked about how he kind of poked fun at another fried chicken. This time, he's going after Best of Washington, and I gotta say, I'm an idiot. See, this is why I shouldn't have a podcast. I have no idea how to fact check anything. I don't know what I'm talking about, but I thought Best of Washington was Taste of Washington. I thought it was a festival. And so when he posted this thing, I was thinking festivals and whatever. But actually, since you have a little experience with him, why don't you explain what Best of Washington is?
Best of Washington, well, we connected over a year ago, and they reached out. They were like, hey, I'm in your area. Is there anything you want to promote? And so I was like, yeah, I had just come out with the Uncle Phil sandwich, which is a big seller now.
What is the Uncle Phil?
I was going to say.
Oh, so it's brisket on a challah hoagie roll with peppers and onions, horseradish, mayo, and provolone cheese whiz. It's kind of like just another take on a Philly. And,
got it.
But
so it's not a judge.
No, Phil is also my little brother, and he was a great uncle to my daughters. And so I was like, yo, I just named a sandwich after you.
God, I assumed it was Fresh Prince. I'm sorry.
But no, fuck Will. Fuck Will.
Okay, that's a different podcast. Okay, Chris Rock. Okay, go ahead.
But, but anyway, I was like, sure, I got this new sandwich you could promote. You know, I'm not very good at TikToking, so we did a little barter. I was like, here's the sandwich. You know, they did a wonderful video on it, and I posted it, got over 3,000 likes. Yeah. You know, it definitely sent some people through the doors, and there were three very nice people.
Yeah, awesome.
And so I've had nothing but good experiences from them.
Okay, and obviously that's the beauty of this thing, because there's different opinions, and I'm on the fence, because I've kind of pumped my brakes on social media and like doing it as a job to promote stuff, because like before Wu-Tang, like I you know, I was hardcore. I posted every single day. I knew what times to post at. I knew the hashtags to do, blah, blah, blah. And I kind of chilled on it because it is a job. And like, so I do respect that part of it.
That's the thing is I'm not good at like TikTok and shit.
Yeah.
And I think
you
got three young ladies who are offering. I'm like, yep.
I think that's great. I think some other restaurants disagree with you. They don't, or you know, not disagree, because obviously you got the value out of it. Gary, how do you feel about influencers? You get people that are like, hey, give me some free shit or give me some money and I'll videotape it.
Somehow I always say yes, but how do I feel about it? Not that great.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, but social media for us is huge. I mean, I really believe in the power of social media. But I'll always take an influencer if they want to come in and
you're have a line out the door.
I mean, it's you know, I just want them to come when it's fucking crazy.
Totally. Yeah, right.
And I want them to capture what's going on with us.
Right.
And
they were really respectful, asking me like, well, what time is a good time and all that. You know,
you also got to imagine, you know, we paid a video guy for the Run the Jewels thing, and I probably shouldn't say how much it was very expensive.
Yeah,
video
yeah.
people are very expensive.
Totally.
So
if I asked my website to come in and do another video shoot, they would charge me. You know, I think Best of Washington is asking people for about $300 now to do it. Back then, they were just doing it like
doing it for free.
Yeah, yeah.
I gotta say, I think that's fair. I think $300 is to not have to pay a video person. You know, if I like the trading food thing a lot better, because like if you're giving them a $20 sandwich where your food cost is $5, like that's worth it. But I gotta say, I love this dude Buddy. Like, I can't wait to try his food.
the thing was pretty good.
But I don't know if this is legal or not, but I'm gonna play this. This is what he posted. So I cut off, but it was I can't think of it. It was Billy from Saw, and basically what he said was like, hey, I want you to come up with five businesses that say they, you know, you've helped them. And he was saying, my engagement of just talking shit about you has done more than me paying you $300. But I thought it was very funny. Dave, it sounds like their business, you know, what they do does work for people. But I don't know. My dream is, you know how we said,
well,
like,
it's definitely, it's not like one side, like, you know.
Yeah, no, totally.
Everybody chimes in. I had a bunch of people being like, fuck that barbecue, you know, my barbecue place is better. You know, I mean, it's everyone a fucking free for all, man.
I was really happy about the Run the Jewels event because we didn't get any negative feedback. And then the other day I looked on the Pop Instagram and someone's like, I love the dinner, except one person said it was too loud. That might have been the same person that called you to tell you where to get apple pie. And then one person was really upset because we had a dish. I don't know if I described this, but if you know the Run the Jewels logo, it's a pistol and fist. So we did a shiso leaf with basil caviar on one hand and then a water gun filled with gazpacho.
The bump.
The pistol and fist. And so someone was upset about the gun part where they're like, I can't believe in this climate you have people drinking gazpacho out of a gun. And I go, yeah, the gazpacho in the news, I understand maybe that's a little insensitive. But this brings up a great point. This is something I've talked about on the podcast a lot. I'm an idiot. I thought Best of Washington was a festival. I'm thinking Taste of Washington. So I got all riled up because I thought people were talking shit about festivals in Seattle. Because I don't need to point anyone out, but as a restaurant owner in the past and participating in these festivals, I've always thought they were bullshit. And I don't mean this to attack any festival because I'm going to explain why at the end of this. But I don't know. Have you done any of these festivals where you hand out free food? And
I've done it in the past. We don't do it currently.
And you don't have to name it, but like, what are your takes on it? Did you see people come back from it?
Let's talk about the Taste of Washington one. Sure, sure. I mean, like, back in the day, it was a lot of people giving samples of food out that was, you get to try food from all different restaurants.
Right.
Now, I don't want to put down a festival either, but I'm just saying that now you go there and it's like you're going to the fair. Yeah. And there's funnel cakes and corn dogs and there are some restaurants in there
and
too.
I don't know. Is it free or is it?
No, like, now it's free to get in and you pay.
You pay when you get there.
Like $20.
It's like a street food festival.
But everyone's required to have one like $4 item.
Right.
That's like a third size something.
Right. Yeah. It's like 1.2 ounces.
Yeah. Right. And that's to try to keep the spirit of it's a tasting event, right? But it
food's
takes 45
expensive.
Minutes to get in. You're in line for 45 minutes. You couldn't taste.
Right.
You get
it's too expensive to be giving that out.
So,
know?
Yeah, here's the thing. Like, I don't, I'm sure their intentions are well, and they're trying to promote restaurants. And I don't know them personally. I'm not trying to talk shit about them. But my experience is, one, it feels like Costco. It feels like no one's going to remember your name. If I'm handing out a slider, people are just jumping because, like, you can't keep up with the demand. So, like, as soon as the tray comes up, a bunch of hungry people, fucking hungry hippo that shit, grab it, move on to the next. Like, hey, honey, you go wait in line for this one. And, like, no one gives a fuck about the name of your restaurant. They just spent XYZ money and this time to get in. They're starving. They just want to fill their bellies. So I feel like you don't really get the interaction. People are just shoving food down their throat. Second, I've been asked to participate in these things like, oh, can you offer a $5 item? And here's why I won't do it. The action for me to make a dish is the same. If I make a $17 dish or a $4 dish, it's still like with kutu at least. Like,
yeah.
I'm still the same action, put in the box, hand it to you. And so just for the volume, like, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm never going to make money. Like, if I serve 200 people at $4, like $5, like that's $1,000. Like, that doesn't cover my day,
just,
you know?
Just your movement of your hands and your arms for 200 plates is worth four. Like, your $4.
The labor is $4.
And forget how it fucks up your week. Like, you still have a job.
Yeah,
you're doing
stuff.
And all of a sudden, you have 3 days of, like, working 15-hour days on addition to what you do. It's crazy.
The oxygen going in and out of your fucking lungs is worth $4, Sid.
There's the podcast name. Anyway, we've talked about this before, about the idea of doing a Seattle Restaurant Podcast Festival. And I've always kind of thought about it, kind of being in the style of Burning Beast, do it out on a farm, 150 people, like, have a lot of fun, stay up all night, drink, do drugs, cook whole animals, whatever. And then I guess, like, after doing the Legion deal with Run the Jewels, I got this hair up my ass of, like, what if I did the coolest fucking food festival at the Seattle Center?
Yeah, man.
And I think this is my new dream. And second dream. So I want Dave Matthews to come on the podcast.
God damn it. No.
And then I want just to talk about food. And then two, I want to do
of course, just talk about food.
I want to do the Seattle Restaurant Podcast Festival at a large event.
Yeah,
like,
dude.
It could be a Merrimore, whatever. And what I want to do is I want to make it interactive with every restaurant. I don't want it to be a bunch of booths where people like line up like
a water balloon booths for Dave Matthews.
So maybe we can get Dave Matthews to play.
Absolutely not.
You're going to make a lot of money soon. It's going to be really lucrative.
But
so you're going to be one type of person there, though.
but I think my idea is to get as far away from that as possible, to get away from the just like, hey, you know, let's just feed people really fast. Let's put experiences into it. Like, let's do a whole animal cookery, like, yeah, by Hamdi. Let's get you to do some kind of cool.
That's how communities around the fucking planet eat, you know? And so right. I think it's more of a group gathering type meal than anything like hoity-toity, here, let me put a fucking piece of Tobiko on your Triscuit. Yeah.
I promise I won't be there. But anyway, so the idea has been baking in my head for about a week, and I'm going to start reaching out to people. So we're going to need sponsors. We're going to need – I think the idea is, like, you have to have come on the podcast at least once to participate if you want to be a restaurant. But we're working on it, and I think this is the new dream. So the farm idea might still be something we do. I also got to say, like, I love doing the live podcast, and as soon as we did it, we started getting – like, Vera's reached out. I'm like, hey, if you want to do a live podcast, we can do it here. Yeah. And I think I
would love to see people like Tom Douglas and Melissa from Song stop by too.
Yeah. So yeah, I think we can do a lot of fun stuff with that.
Myrtle Edwards Park right there too is really cool on the water.
Yeah, yeah. Where they used to have Hemp Fest. Yeah.
Like, now that's not really used all through the summer. We're looking at possibly like in
Hemp Fest is no more.
But yeah, that's a good spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
So now let's
do it, Sid. Stop fucking around.
Well, so yeah, and I'm gonna need help because I'm not great at paperwork. So like, I'm gonna try to find the right partners that know how to book Myrtle Edwards or like, I just want to do the creative fun stuff.
So if we start at the ground, maybe we could work our way to the top of the Space Needle and actually show them what good food is.
And it comes full circle.
Why can't there ever be good food in the Space Needle?
Oh my god. So before the end of the year, Eater asked me to answer some questions, just random stuff. And one of the things they asked me was what I'd like to see as in the new year. And most restaurants responded like, oh, here's why, like, I want to see the new Paco Jet or whatever. Like, cool. I did my thing where I just bitch about stuff as usual. And I said, my biggest hope for the restaurant industry for 2024 is for people that make 100K plus to stop bitching about the price of food. No one is getting rich doing this. You don't see line cooks driving Teslas. Most of us don't have health insurance. Right now, I feel like most restaurants are just barely surviving, but they are too scared to raise their prices. If you want to see some really cool, innovative shit in the city, stop complaining about prices. No one works their best while being told, we think you make too much money for what you do. That pissed some people off.
It was my favorite post of the week, and I've been reading it all week.
Well, it's funny because, like, with all that stuff, I kind of read a couple times, like, can I come off as pretentious? There's one thing I said that pissed some people off where I said, like,
Tesla?
No. Well, I said something like
Dave Matthews.
I just said, you know, I don't love the idea of people doing GoFundMes to open up a restaurant. Like, and it was kind of a half dad. I don't really feel strongly about it. But, like, I also, when I see it, I'm like, I'll come eat at your restaurant, but I'm not going to give you like $2,000 to open up a restaurant. But anyway, so that was the touchy subject. People were kind of be like, oh, well, some people need it, blah, blah, blah. And I get it. This thing, I don't think I said, what I'm saying is, like, stop abusing service food workers, you know?
Totally.
Well,
you're not only saying the people directly right in front of you aren't worth it. You're also saying, like, the ranchers aren't worth it. Fucking right. Farmers aren't worth it. The bakers aren't worth it. I mean.
Yeah, the whole line.
Yeah,
everybody,
and I think and it's funny because a lot of comments were like you know, 100,000 isn't a lot of money in the city. And I'm like, yeah, no shit. What do you think line cooks make? And it's interesting. Like, I mean, you said like some servers at Beer Hall are making six figures, but like, you know, I guess I probably shouldn't say it is, but like, I asked once, and the chef of the best restaurant in Seattle. We don't have to say who it is, but I think if you ask, there's a common thread. From my understanding, the chef of the best restaurant in Seattle makes $100,000. Can you imagine, like, that, like, to be the chef in the best restaurant in Seattle and you're making $100,000, which, according to a lot of
which
people,
which in Seattle is like pretty
not much.
No,
I can't imagine working my whole life to get to that point. It's just crazy. Like,
you pay that in parking.
No, I don't know. So
he's so happy though.
Yeah. Dave, you eat anywhere this week?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Me and Chris Morgan and Noah all went out to a Duelist restaurant.
Yes. It's an
Ethiopian restaurant, and holy shit, it was so good. It was such a great experience. It's not fancy, but I love, like, the atmosphere, the thick incense in the air, the smell of, you know, beef lamb cooking in the kitchen, like, loud music that sounds like you're in a massage parlor in a different world. Yeah, I just loved everything about it.
With your blind masseuse.
Oh, my God, man. Yeah, and, yeah, we got into it. And
yeah, what'd you eat? Everything?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
No, we got, like, a huge platter. It was half meat, half vegetables, and all served on that wonderful bread that they make.
Whatever. What was it? When you say huge platter, for one person, or was it for the whole table?
Yeah, it was for the whole table.
Oh, my God. That's my favorite.
It was amazing.
Was there an Ethiopian restaurant next door to that one?
No. No, and it's funny because I thought it's spelled A-D-U-L-I-S. Yeah. And when Chris is like, it's right here on the left. And I looked over, I'm like, holy shit, because I thought it said adult. So I thought that was a strip club. He's like, how do you think I found it?
Yeah, like, came up a bunch of dollar bills. Like, I guess I'll take the Ethiopian food instead of the tits. I went to a great place this week with Dante and Ono. El Patio on 99. You ever been to El Patio?
No.
Okay. I posted about it, and everyone goes, and everyone said the same thing I do, where they go, I drive by that place all the time. And, like, you've driven by it, you've seen it popping. It's on, like, Aurora and 125th-ish. And it just looks legit when you drive by it. Like very, like, it's you know, Central American, I gotta look at what I got, but, I walk in there. First of all, they're mad at you if you don't speak Spanish. Like, so that's a great sign.
Well, you walk in and say El Patio.
Yeah, yeah. And like we were the only non, like, Mexican people in there, and it was fucking so dope. I got the thing where they cook it in the mortar and pestle. Have you seen that? Where they, like, flip it over, burn it, and then they put, like, cactus and shrimp and steak and chicken and, like, the tomato sauce.
Fucking awesome.
And
sounds good. And
I gotta say, the best tortillas I've ever had in my life. They must be made there, but fucking so good. So El Patio on Aurora.
Hola.
Este
es El Patio.
In your whole life, where do you like to eat?
In my whole life, I'm not really sure. I can tell you my favorite two dishes are at one restaurant right now this year, and that's Honey Court.
Honey Court. I don't even know where
Honey
this
Court
is.
In the National District. The Ooh. Hong Kong lobster and the salt and pepper sole are two of the best things I've ever eaten in my life.
I haven't had sole in so long.
Yeah. It's fried.
Actually,
salt,
like,
pepper.
I, you know, if you follow Gary on Instagram or anything, you eat out a good amount.
Lots,
like,
a
yeah,
lot.
Yeah.
A
And that's high praise. Tell me about this lobster dish.
I mean, so they have live lobster in the tank, so they'll grab it out of the tank, and they chop that lobster up into chunks and deep fry it. They put a really thin batter on it, and it's deep fried with all these different spices. And so when you pick up a piece off the plate, there'll be a piece of shell with the meat stuck to it, right? So you just kind of eat it off
Got
of
it.
The shell.
Yeah. Kind of like a crab.
Absolutely incredible. Yeah. I mean, absolutely incredible. Just a great dish.
What's the name again?
It's called Honey Court. Honey Court. It's right by Ho Ho's and Purple Dot, like Purple Dot, something like that.
I gotta get down there.
Yeah, there's some cool places in the National District that we're really kind of trying to discover.
Yeah.
We also love Hot Pot out there. Happy Lamb Hot Pot is an incredible spot for a good hot pot.
Nice. What are some of your favorites, just in general, in Seattle?
We live in Seattle now, so Buddha Rukska.
Oh my god!
I mean, like
that crack chicken.
It's spicy garlic or crispy garlic chicken, and everyone calls it crack.
Everyone calls it crack chicken.
Yeah, that's incredible. Since we're over on that end, Stevie's Pizza, we eat a lot. Yeah. Steve's Famous. Just trying to, you know, Moto Pizza. I'm still into it.
I can't stop.
Yeah. Like, I keep thinking it's gonna be a fad for me, but it's just not.
Yeah.
Like, it's just delicious.
A never ending trend.
Yeah. You said you went to Lady J and
That's a great spot.
Yeah. A lot of fun stuff out there. Let's see.
I was thinking about doing something like a lobster tank, but with squirrels. So
Wouldn't they drown? They'd drown.
So
they?
When you walk into Buckshot Honey, you get to, like, choose your own squirrel.
Oh my god,
that would be so awesome!
How would you kill him?
You know, just like a
no, lobster. I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Just like a lobster.
So you just knife through the head?
No, I was, you just put him in boiling water.
Is it technically illegal though?
I don't know.
None of this is legal. This is all a joke.
But it's wild.
Is there a way to do this?
Catch them yourself.
Close your eyes and imagine, because a lot of people walk in, because my on my sign, I have a squirrel. It goes with the whole story of Buckshot Honey. A lot of people are like, do you serve squirrel? And I'm like, no. we don't really. But could you imagine a squirrel farm? It's like, what?
I can't stop thinking about a video of you pulling out a squirrel, taking it in the back, and then serving it up.
Like yeah, hormones, so they get really nice gut, nice thighs on them, you know, like a lot of meat.
No, we got some nice squirrels in the mountains, man.
I just can't imagine the PETA parade outside your door. What I'm going to do for your for Christmas, I'm going to go to Ballyhoo Curiosity Shop. I'm going to have them make you a fish tank of, like, stuffed squirrels, and then you can put it in your front and say that's your live squirrel. Yeah. And then piss off PETA anyway.
Pick one.
I mean, rattlesnake. You could have rattlesnake in a
for sure.
Like,
it should be half shooting range, half rattlesnake. And just like
shoot your own. About,
yeah, you could use axe throwing to get your squirrel. did you hear about the lady in Maine who she was a PETA vegetarian style lady?
A PETA vegetarian style lady. And, sounds like your dream lady.
Yeah, she picked. There was a large, like, 3-pound lobster in a tank, and she paid. She's like, she wanted to, like, set it free. And so she paid like $300 for this lobster, put it in the car, and drove it to the coast. It died on the way to the coast.
I've heard about people doing that in, like, salt water and, like, wrong kind of water or whatever. That's a dumbass thing to do. There's got to be better ways to spend $300.
Totally.
Eating a lobster is the first one.
Gary, before we get out of here, what do you want to promote? What you got going on? Tell us about Moss Lake. Tell us about everything going on.
We have a Moss Bay Hall.
Sorry. Yeah. What did I say? Moss
Bay I'm glad you can only come on here once.
Right?
no. We have a lot of stuff going on. We've got all you can eat. I got about 1,000 pounds of crab last week right off the boat.
This is a thing you do a lot.
Yeah, I love it. I've got this guy at Pacific Seafood that he only calls me if it's like 7 a.m. and he'll be like, I have it. I have 900 pounds. I have 1,200 pounds.
I have the bag.
Dungeness crab. They're coming off the boat right now and we're going to cook them right now. But if you don't tell me in an hour, I won't even be up.
Right.
And I'll get the message and I'll be like, okay, I have an hour. I can sleep for a half hour more. And think about it. And then I got to get up and tell him. And then he'll be like, yeah. And so then
is he asking you? Do you want it or not want it?
Yeah, just do I want it or not? Because I'm not going to buy it if it's more than $6 a pound, right? Like, it has to be some sort of deal that went wrong. Like, Fred Meyer didn't buy it or something
happened. Is that what happened?
Yeah. So, because I'm charging $69 for all you can eat Dungeness crab. Right. And people are commenting that that's too expensive. And I'm thinking, I'm not even making money on that anyway. Yeah. Like, people are eating 3 crabs, you know, and they're 2 pounds. So, you know, $40 of that is just crab.
I don't care. I worked at this place called Rue. This is the worst day of my career, I think. I worked at a place called Rue, and they decided they wanted to do all you can eat crab night, Dungeness dinner. And so the owner, who was a cheapskate, was like, okay, well, I bet people are going to eat half a crab each.
Jeez.
And so we have all these people. I think it was like $50 on that. We set up the paper. It was kind of a nicer restaurant. We put paper everywhere, whatever. Pack is sold out, line out the door. I just remember, like, we had these plates of potatoes and corn and whatever, and then crab. And, like, so first round, everyone's happy. Half a crab's gone. Then everyone's asking for the next one, and, like, we're just out. And I remember, like, I think the owner's bouncer was like, what's the problem? They got a half a crab. And, like, he's in the back cooking, like, not giving a shit. And we had to, like, go talk to his customers and go, there is no more crab.
You guys said all you can eat, though?
Yeah.
That's insane.
It was, I remember that was the drunkest I ever gotten afterwards. It was the one, I remember I was being like, this is fun. Like, we all went out and be like, how the fuck did this happen?
We overpurchase and then we make Dungeness crab chowder for the next week.
Yeah, so did you literally buy 1,000 pounds of crab?
Yeah, like 950. Pounds is what they had, and I bought that. So now we have two locations. We're gonna do both.
I cannot believe that people would take like this is a fucking species of crab that is just delicious. It's literally at the top of the food chain, and people are like, "Yeah, I just don't know if it's worth it."
Don't worry about
it. It's crazy.
Sell out?
We're not sold out yet. We're probably half sold out, but we'll sell out in the next couple days.
Okay, so real quick. So explain the whole thing. What's the date and where it's at? And
that is
how
on
do they get
Sunday, February 4th. So that's Sunday.
Yep.
You can go on queenannebeerhall.com and you can buy them for either location. They're $69 for all you can eat. You get fresh baked pretzels, clam chowder, salad.
That's a great deal.
I encourage you to eat those things too before the crab comes out.
Yeah. Fill up on bread.
You're like, why are you giving all that stuff away? Because I have to do that. Yeah. Like, and so, yeah, so it's great. And actually, we're calling it Rock and Roll Crab Night. We have some classic rock DJs at both locations that are going to be playing cool tunes and stuff. And
do you have little hammers and everything for everybody?
Oh, yeah. We don't have hammers, but we definitely have the crackers. We have
That's one way to slow them down. Is just don't give them the crab crackers.
Right.
Like that.
You should get hella primitive and just give them a rock.
That would be that's the theme. Yeah, yeah, right.
Rock and roll.
Like caveman crab night or something like that, right? And just like have that band up there with the drum.
That's fucking I love it. $69 for all we can eat Dungeons.
That's
insane.
A great fucking deal.
I would say I would go. However, if you're not in Queen Anne or you're not on the east side and you want to get some tacos, Sunday, February 4th, Luis and I are doing a taco night at Last Call in Freelard, and it's going to be 5 p.m. till sellout, and Luis is on his way now, and we're going to hammer out the menu, but...
I thought we were going to lunch.
Yeah, we're going to go to lunch, and we're going to talk about our menu.
Okay.
You're going to hear about what tacos we're going to do. But I'm getting closer. I just talked to Mackenzie from No Bones, and she's going to send me some cauliflower wings for you vegans, because it's something I forgot about. And yesterday I had a vegan customer go, ooh, because I had flyers for this thing. It's like, oh, I want to come. You're going to have a veganized? I'm like, yep, totally. And I'm
like, okay, those are really good.
I got to get a
cauliflower.
Her cauliflower wings are good. So we're going to figure out some kind of fun vegan taco out of that. I think I'm going to do a calamari one. And we'll talk about it. No, I have to talk about it now, right?
Yeah.
I'll post the menu this week because it's not totally done yet. But we're also going to do the dessert and some sides and stuff. We're also going to have $2 Jello shots. We're going to have a Legion beer special. We're going to have a fucking pinata. It's going to be a fun time. So
hey, Sid.
Yeah.
Do you remember like 5 years ago when we were playing paintball?
Yes.
And I snuck up behind you, and you remember you're not supposed to shoot people. If they you ask them first, you go surrender or die.
Yeah.
Do you remember this situation? Or did you
Can I start? Is this a drunk story?
No, it's not drunk. Okay, I think we were both sober.
Yeah. Because you said you had a drunk story to tell on the Kenji podcast.
Oh no, not a drunk story. This is the story.
This is the story.
It was the paintball story.
Okay. Can I set it up real quick?
Okay.
I used to own a restaurant group called, well, it was Brent Circuses, and we also had Hollow Falafel and Woodshop Barbecue. So that was one group. And I challenged Josh Henderson, my former employer. I go, hey, now I have a restaurant group. Let's go head-to-head with your restaurant group in a paintball tournament. Whoever loses has to pay for everything. Go.
So we all...
So you work for...
I worked for Josh.
What was the burger? Great State
Burger.
So you were on Josh's team. So we were, as usual, against each other.
Always. With love. But anyway, so we all scurry into the woods, and, you know, I think most everybody was, the woods were pretty empty. Everybody got shot, and I was creeping around, and I found Sid facing away from me, laying on his belly in, like, a little hole. And I go, hey, Sid. And he turns around. He's like, oh, shit. I go, surrender or die. He goes, surrender. And I just started pulling the trigger. Started shooting the fuck out.
What? Why would you? What's this have to do with anything? And why would you? You just want me to have animosity towards you?
Like, is this a funny story?
This was a story. Okay, because I have a story to tell about you on the Sober Podcast. I go, oh, I assume it was something I did when I was drunk, and I was a little nervous because I was like, I did some shitty things when I was drunk. No. You fucking.
No, it was just hilarious.
All right. Well, on that note, anything you need to promote? Did we already go over that?
No, just come say hi. If you're, hopefully the ski resort right now has been kind of slushy and rainy, but we're supposed to get some new powder this week. I got a pork shank special that I'm going to do, and stop by, say hi.
Cool. Well, this is perfect timing because the asshole neighbors that are building 3 houses in their backyard to rent to people, the construction is starting, and it raises a question. If froze the other day, right? And so there's a bunch of like big chunks of ice. If I threw a chunk of this ice through their window and broke it and the ice melted, is there any way for me to get in trouble?
No, because there'd be no evidence.
Right? Yeah, except for admitting it on the podcast.
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
It's cool. It's like murdering someone with an icicle. It's not
totally.
It's not a thing.
You never got in trouble for that.
No, it can go straight through the heart. It's not a thing.
Wow. All right.
It melts.
All right. Well, if it gets that bad, I was thinking, like, I really hate these people next door. And I want to, like, when they put the houses up for rent, I want to fuck with them. I was like, either going to get a Trump sign or just, like, I think that might be the best one. Just put a Trump sign, like, right when people come in. I think that would keep people away.
God, it's going to be a
the parking's going to be a nightmare. Or like just standing out there in bikini or something. We'll see. If you have ideas of how I can fuck with my neighbors to make sure they don't rent these houses, let me know. Okay, well, that's enough of that bullshit.
We'll start thinking really hard about it.
We'll start another podcast about about fucking with the neighbors. All right, guys. Well, Gary, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks, man. We
didn't really talk about Wu-Tang, but hey, thanks for hosting. That was a great time. It was the only venue I could do it in, and it kind of catapulted me to where I'm now. So thanks for being on board since day one. I love you, man. Dave, I don't like you. All right, well, this is going to be weird, but we're going to try it.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us on
the
restaurant
Seattle
podcast.
All right, we fucked it up. All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Bye.